Now let's think about Judges chapter 7. So in the middle of this scene, in verse 15, Gideon worships God. He bows down and worshipped. In other words, he realizes, he gets a glimpse of who God is, and he thanks God and praises God and acknowledges God and realizes that God is God and he is not. And in a sense, Gideon is made for this. He is made to worship God, and each of us are made to worship God. And yet very often, that isn't what we do, is it? That isn't our response to God. Very often we are rerouted from worshipping God for lots of different reasons. We fall into bed in the evening, too tired, too weak to thank him for the day. The sustained pressure of work or parenting fills our minds and our hearts, and we feel we are too weak to worship. We think back on the week, and we're so busy thinking about all that we have achieved that we don't thank God for what he has done. Or we come to church on a Sunday morning or evening, and it is a place that is designed to facilitate our worship. And sometimes we are so fearful of the future that we leave having not actually realized just who God is and how great he is. And yet God leads Gideon to a point of worship. And the question is, how can we be led to a place or a point of worship? So let's look at where this journey starts. So the journey for Gideon starts not in verse 15, but in verse 1. Early in the morning, Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all his men camped at the spring of Harod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Moreh. So this is where it all begins, in a sense, this chapter, obviously. So what has happened is that Gideon has gathered quite a large amount of people. So we'll see a bit later on that it's 32,000 people. So this is a real show of strength on Gideon's part, on the Israelites' part. And yet, God looks at this and he thinks this is actually quite a dangerous position that they are in. Why is it dangerous? Well, it's not because of the Midianites who are camped across from them. It is because they are in a position of strength. They are in a position of numerical and military strength. And God recognizes that if they win with 32,000 men in their army, that there will be a real temptation to think that they are the ones who have done it, that they are the ones who have achieved it. Look at verse 2. The Lord said to Gideon, "You have too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into their hands, or Israel would boast against me. My own strength has saved me." So God wants to give them this victory, and yet he wants to give it to them in a way that is going to protect them against pride or protect them against boasting. He wants to give it to them in a way that instead of leading them away from worshipping him, that it will lead them to worship him. Now, it is a constant temptation for us, isn't it? Whenever we get into a position of apparent strength, whether it's lots of people coming to church, lots of numbers, whether it is that we feel strong emotionally on a particular day, whether it is that we feel strong financially or in other ways, lots of options in our career, there's always this temptation to pride or to boasting, to thinking that I have done this. I'm sure you know Tim Keller. He's a retired pastor in Manhattan, and he set up this church, Redeemer, back in the late 80s, early 90s. And people said he was a bit insensible to set up this church. And yet over the years, thousands of people have come to the church. And you wonder, how does somebody see their church grow like that without being tempted to pride, without being tempted to think, I have done this? And recently I heard Tim Keller in an interview saying that every Tuesday morning he would spend 2 hours confessing his sin to God. Why did he do that? Because he realized the danger that he was in as the church grew and grew and grew. The danger of pride and temptation. And this is what God wants to guard Gideon against and the Israelites against, and us against at times. So God reduces them. In verse 3, now announce to the army, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead. So 22,000 men left while 10,000 remained. What is Gideon thinking when this is happening? Gideon is one of the forces of military nature, if that is a phrase in Israel. He's gathered people in a way that hasn't happened for years. And now he watches as God sends 2/3 of them away. I wonder what he was thinking. God, I thought you wanted us to win this battle. And you're throwing it away before we've even begun. And God says, well, there's actually still too many in verse 4. There are still too many men. You're still in danger, essentially. Take them down to the water and I will thin them out for you there. If I say, this one shall go with you, he shall go. But if I say, this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. So Gideon took the men down to the water. The Lord told him, separate those who lap the water with their tongues as a dog laps from those who kneel down to drink. 300 of them drank from cupped hands, lapping like dogs. All the rest got down on their knees to drink. I'm sure Gideon was watching this thinking, please, Lord, choose the ones who have kneeled down to drink. Please, Lord, because there's only 300 who've taken the other option. What does God do? Verse 7, the Lord said to Gideon, with the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the others go home. He's down to 300 men from 32,000. And you might wonder, why does God choose this particular method to filter them out, to sift through them? And people have come up with theories. Perhaps one of the most common is that those who are drinking from lapped or cupped hands were able to keep an eye out for the enemy on the horizon as they were drinking. I'm not going to show you the other version of how they drank, because I probably won't be able to get back up again. So they were the ones who were able to see the army coming. Now, maybe that is what the rationale was here. But I mean, the mechanism is not as important as why God has done this. Why God has done this. He has done this because he wants them to realize that he is the one who will give the Midianites into your hands. We see it again in verse 7. I will give the Midianites into your hands. There it is again, loud and clear for Gideon. And so Gideon watches many more of his men leave. Verse 8, Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites home, but kept the 300 who took over the provisions and the trumpets of the others. And then at the end of verse 8, just to remind you, now the camp of Midian lay below him in the valley as if you'd forgotten. And guess what's happening in the camp of Midian? Nobody is leaving. They're all still there like locusts in the valley as Gideon watches his men leave. Why is God doing it? He's doing it because he's going to give them the victory, but he's going to do it in a way that guards them against boasting so that they can worship him. Now, from God's perspective, they are ready. They may feel their weakness, but now, Gideon, you are ready to receive this victory. Now, we've known something of this, haven't we, in recent times? As we've said goodbye to people in Grosvenor for good, godly reasons. As we say goodbye again, and it is so hard to say those goodbyes. And it is so hard to be the person going, isn't it? To feel the sense of weakness, not knowing what the future holds. And yet God still wants to work out his promises in our lives. The promises remain of victory, that he will build his church. But he will do it in a way that guards us from thinking that we are the ones responsible. This is what we realized, isn't it? If you're a believer, if you're a Christian, this is what you realized when you first believed. God has saved me, and he's done it in a way that I cannot claim any part of it. He has done it through Jesus long before I was born. I cannot claim any part of it, and he loves to continue to do that in our lives as we feel our weakness. It might not be that he's reducing us numerically. It might be that he's reducing us health-wise, energy-wise, emotionally, sleep-wise, and you're thinking, I just cannot do it. It is too hard. And it is hard. It is really hard at times to live in this fallen world. And this is a difficult thing to say, but as hard as it is a good place to be in. It is a good place to be in, to know our weakness, to feel our weakness. Because that is the first step on a journey to worshipping God. Let's look at the next step. God says to Gideon, essentially in verse 9, off you go. During that night, the Lord said to Gideon, get up, go down against the camp, because I'm going to give it into your hands. This is the third time God says this, I'm going to give it into your hands. But then God says, if you are afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Purah and listen to what they are saying. Afterward, you will be encouraged to attack the camp. So God knows that Gideon is human and limited and finite and feels the weakness of the position that God has brought him to. And so what does God say to Gideon? He says, go down against the camp, but if you're afraid to go down against the camp, go down against the camp. But there's a world of difference between those two options, because the first option is to go down with the 300 men and attack. The second option is to go down with your servant in the night, and I will meet with you there and reassure you. It is like God is saying to Gideon, if you're afraid to go this far, come this far towards me in faith, in trust. If you're afraid, Gideon. And as God says that, in my mind, I just see this Gideon-shaped cloud of dust fleeing and running to take the second option with his servant, Purah. God is going to reassure them. Into the fear that Gideon feels, God is going to reassure him. Into the sense of weakness that Gideon feels, God is going to reassure him. So what happens? Well, let's have a look. Verse 11, the second half. So he and Purah, his servant, went down to the outposts of the camp. The Midianites, the Amalekites, and all the eastern peoples had settled in the valley thick as locusts. Their camels could no more be counted than the sand on the seashore. Gideon arrived just as a man was telling a friend his dream. We'll pause there for a moment. Can you see Gideon and Purah picking their way through the darkness as they approach the armed guard that surrounds the Midianite camp? Can you hear the quiet night air as they see these shadowy figures, thousands and thousands of men and tents, like locusts? What do locusts do? They devour, they eat your crops, and this is exactly what the Midianites have been doing. They are sleeping there, waiting to arise and devour and to kill the animals again of the Israelites, to drive them into the hills again. And it's quietness. I'm sure Gideon and Purah would have been conscious of every breath they took, every little crack of a twig under their feet, probably afraid to even speak, a gesture of a hand, the whites of their eyes as they see the enemy up close. They must have been thinking and communicating to each other through their eyes, this is where we're going to receive reassurance. How is this going to reassure us? And then in the quietness, one voice, verse 13, Gideon arrived just as a man was telling a friend his dream. I had a dream, he was saying. A round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. It struck the tent with such force that the tent overturned and collapsed. Now, the NIV smooths this for us so it's more readable, but three times, if you translate it really, really literally, it says, behold. Behold, Gideon arrived just as a man was telling his friend a dream. Behold, I had a dream, he was saying. Behold, a round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. And when it says, behold, three times, you're supposed to behold. This is incredible. They have walked into the enemy camp. And just at that moment, this man is telling in a whisper, his friend a dream. And what becomes more incredible is the friend's response in verse 14. This can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash the Israelite. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands. This is unbelievable. This is shocking that God has given Gideon this reassurance on the lips of the enemy in the middle of the night. This is miraculous, a dream and its interpretation in these two men who do not know God. And they speak about Gideon as though they knew him personally. It's remarkable. It's not unheard of in the Bible where somebody who doesn't believe in God, who is opposed to God, speaks the truth of God without realizing it. You think of the priests mocking Jesus, the high priest mocking Jesus. He saved others, he cannot save himself. Could you get a better summary of the gospel? And yet they did not believe it. And here, Gideon receives this reassurance miraculously on the lips of the enemy. Not only do they know his name, they know that they will be defeated. Gideon has watched God reduce his army. And God says, I will give the Midianites into your hand. He has watched God reduce his army again, and God says, I will give the Midianites into your hand. He has heard God call him into battle, and he says, I will give the Midianites into your hand. He has crept quietly into the heart of the enemy territory, and right there on the lips of the enemy, I will give the Midianites into your hand. God reassures Gideon through his truth on the enemy lips. And it's like a dad teaching his son to walk. He says to Gideon, go and attack the camp, but if you cannot walk that far, come this far and I will catch you, Gideon. He reassures Gideon right there. And each time Gideon steps towards him, God catches him with reassurance. He gives him this little diamond, this little gem in the darkness. I will give the Midianites into your hand, and Gideon receives reassurance. Occasionally you get this. Somebody around you who doesn't know God, who doesn't want to know God. I remember reading Fintan O'Toole last year. He says he's opposed to God, the idea of God, of the God of the Bible. And he says, the coronavirus has reminded us that we are not the kings of creation. And it was such an encouragement to read that on his lips. Here's one who was opposed to God, and yet he could not but acknowledge the truth. He could not but acknowledge it, because there needs to be this effort of the will to suppress the truth of God. Now, Fintan O'Toole was not given a prophetic dream, but this man was. And as Gideon picks his way through the darkness and receives this reassurance, it reminds us of Jesus. It reminds us of Jesus in the darkness on the cross as the sun grows dark, in the midst of the enemy, as they mock him, as they throw everything at him, as they kill him. And as Jesus hangs there on the cross, what does he hear? He hears no word from God. He hears silence. My God, why have you forsaken me? And we hear the cry of Jesus, it is finished. And as we approach Jesus in the darkness on the cross, we come before the cross again and we hear these words of truth. It is finished. It is over. I have conquered on your behalf. You may feel weak, you may feel fearful, but it is finished, Christian. Sin has been dealt with. The hostility between you and God has been done away with. I wonder, where is God saying to you to come this far, to come this far towards me, and I will reassure you? Is it to just mention to somebody tomorrow that you go to church on a Sunday? You can't bring yourself to give them a full explanation of the gospel. Is that as far as you can go? And amazingly, God will reassure us a as we step that little bit towards him? Is it to open up that conversation with that person that you just do not want to have? You are scared of your life to have it, but you know you must. God says, come this far and I will reassure you. I will reassure you in my son Jesus. What's Gideon's response? Verse 15, as we've seen, Gideon heard the dream, its interpretation. He bowed down and he worshipped. He worshipped. Now, I don't think he busted out the guitar. I don't think he had pura on percussion, but he worships. His heart is caught up in thanks to God, in acknowledging who God is, in recognizing who God is, in praising God. He has heard the promise of God. God has brought him to a point of worship through weakness, through fear, as God reassures him of this promise time and time again. And amazingly, verse 15 is the first time in this chapter that Gideon opens his mouth. Did you notice that? He has been quiet up until now. We have not heard anything from him. What does he say in verse 15? The Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands. He echoes the promise of God to these men. It has taken hold of his heart as he has worshipped this God. He's no longer just hearing the truth. He is living the truth as he calls these men, these 300, to follow him. And as we look at Gideon, there in the dark, his army reduced and far away. Now he is in a place of strength, true strength. He is worshipping. He knows who God is. He is ready. I love watching outdoor-type programs, sitting in my armchair, and one of the guys I enjoy watching is Ray Mears. And in one episode of Ray Mears, he cuts down a branch, and he starts to reduce the branch with his axe, and he's cutting pieces away, cutting, and slowly, gradually, what starts to take shape out of the branch is an oar, or a paddle for his canoe. And he's carving away, looking at the shape of it. And eventually, he says, now it is ready. Now it is ready. And in a sense, that is what God says to Gideon. When Gideon is worshipping God, he is ready. When we are worshipping God, we are ready to be used by God. Let's think briefly. Now that Gideon is in place of true strength, what does he do? He's worshipping God. What does he do? Or to ask the question from another angle, how do you fight a battle that it looks like you are inevitably going to lose? Humanly speaking, 300 against thousands. What next? Well, let's look at verse 15, second half of it. Get up, Gideon says. The Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands. Dividing the 300 men into three companies, he placed trumpets and empty jars in the hands of all of them with torches inside. Watch me, he told them. Follow my lead. When I get to the edge of the camp, do exactly as I do. When I and all who are with me blow our trumpets, then from all around the camp, blow yours and shout for the Lord and for Gideon. So what does Gideon do? He gathers what God has given him, what God has left him with, the 300 men, their trumpets, their jars, their torches. He doesn't dismiss what God has left him with. Okay, God, this is what you have given me. You've called me to this battle, and now I'm going to do the best I can with what you've given me, God, trusting your promise. That's exactly what they do. Verse 19, Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just after they had changed the guard. They blew their trumpets and broke the jars that were in their hands. The three companies blew the trumpets and smashed the jars, grasping the torches in their left hands and holding in their right hands the trumpets they were to blow. They shouted, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. So this is the strategy that Gideon has come up with, and it's pretty good, isn't it? If you're going to fight thousands of men with 300, it's a pretty good strategy. Panic ensues. Verse 21, each man held his position around the camp. All the Midianites ran, crying out as they fled. So they're kind of disoriented as they hear this noise coming from all around them. It's like Dolby surround sound in whatever century this was. And they see these lights kind of in the distance, these torches, and they're like, what's going on? They're just after waking up. And it reminds me a little bit of when I was after getting my first laptop. And I was trying to figure out how to set the alarm on my laptop. And I was messing around with it, and eventually thought I had set it okay and closed it, went to bed. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, what I hear is, and I'm like, and I'm quite disoriented, to be honest, woken from my sleep. And before I even know what I'm doing, I'm standing by my laptop trying to figure out what the alarm, why is the alarm going off? And then I realize it's actually the fire alarm. It's nothing to do with my laptop at all. It was very disorientating, or disorienting, or whatever. And it must have been like this for these guys. They're just after being woken up, middle of the night. Don't know what's going on. And as a result of this strategy, it is a great victory for Gideon. Verse 22, the second half, the army fled. Verse 23, Israelites from Naphtali, Asher, and all Manasseh were called out. They pursued the Midianites. Verse 24, Gideon sent messengers throughout the hill country of Ephraim, saying, come down against the Midianites and seize the waters of the Jordan ahead of them as far as Beth-barah. So Gideon continues to strategize as wave after wave of Israelites join the 300. They capture the Midianites. They kill. They even behead in verse 25. They also capture two of the Midianite leaders, Oreb and Zeb. They killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb, and Zeb at the winepress of Zeb. And as we see this happening, it is gruesome and it is brutal. And yet what we saw at the very start of Judges needs to be loud and clear in our minds. As the first enemy king was killed in the book of Judges, he had to acknowledge that God was being perfectly just in what he was receiving. He had to acknowledge that. And it is hard for us to read this. It is hard for us to hear this. And yet what we see here is God acting perfectly justly through his people at this time in this place. What we need to see here is God returning to his people what had been taken from them. No longer would their crops be taken. No longer would their animals be killed. No longer would they spend years living in fear. And the whole thing is a stroke of genius on Gideon's part. And at the end of the day, though, all they are doing is standing around blowing trumpets and smashing jars and holding torches. And it could have looked very, very foolish. They could have been massacred here. And yet, what do we see them doing? We see them taking what God has given them to do what God has called them to do as best they can. I wonder, what is it, or what area of your life do you feel utterly reduced? And the challenge of Gideon here is, rather than dismissing what you have or who you have in your life, to trust the promises of God, to act on the commands of God with what you have, rather than what you do not have. If you're like me and you look out into the week ahead and you think, it feels like there's loads of time, and then the week goes on and suddenly all your time seems to be gone, and you think, how can I achieve what God has called me to do? The challenge of Gideon is not to be thinking about all the time that you don't have, but to make use of the time that God has given you to do what he has called you to do. Gideon moves into this out of a place of worship, out of a place of recognizing who God is. And yet in all of this, what we need to see more importantly is that it is God who gives them the victory. Verse 22, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to turn on each other with their swords. This is what God had promised all along. I will give the Midianite camp into your hands. Not because of your strength you may feel weak, not because of your courage you may feel fearful, not because of your strategizing it is shaky at best, but because of my promise. We use what we have, what God has given us, to do what he has called us to do, whether it's time, whether it's people or resources or community, to work out the salvation that God has given us. The Christian life is really one of worship, of praising God, enjoying him. It is not easy to do that when we feel weak, when we feel fearful. And yet amazingly, it is possible through the reassurance that we have in Jesus. Even as we feel our own limitations, weakness and worship are not mutually exclusive. We can praise him even when we feel weak, and that is a position of real strength.